And then that was like when they found out that Bo Burnham broke up with Marielle Heller. Did you know that they were dating? Yes.
Isn't she married to... I thought she was married to she one of the Lonely Island guys.
No.
I think of someone else. Celine Sciamma.
Yeah. Am I getting the right director? No. It's not Marielle Heller. It's Laureen
Scafaria.
Yeah, Laureen Scafaria. That's who I meant. Because they both have that similar hair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who did I say? Okay. Who's the director I said? Celine Sciamma.
Celine Sciamma. The lesbian friend.
Yeah.
The idea of Celine Sciamma and Bo Burnham.
Welcome to Feeling It, a podcast where we discuss TV, movies, pop culture, and whether or not we are feeling it. If this is your first time joining us, welcome to the show.
And here we go.
Come on, walk and talk.
All right, here we go.
You guys want to hear something neat?
It's showtime.
Hold your ears, folks.
Here we go.
See what you can do now.
Take your position.
All right, ladies, buckle up.
Let's do this.
Hold on to your butts.
Seriously?
Listen to me very, very carefully.
Hey, it's me again.
Eat him up.
Enjoy.
Hello and welcome. This week, we are discussing Past Lives, Celine Song's new romance drama, which is her first feature film, which got a lot of buzz at Sundance and opened widely this weekend. But before we get into Past Lives, let's introduce ourselves and answer the question, what is your favorite romance movie?
Hi, I'm Sandra Amstutz. I live in Nashville, and it's so cliched, but I can't help but answer the 2005 Pride and Prejudice.
Yes.
I mean,
how many times has that been your answer for an intro question?
That's a great podcast. I mean, it depends on the question, but yeah, probably a lot.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite movie of all time, as you know, is You've Got Mail, which is also a romance, but I love the romance in Pride and Prejudice more. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's a lot of things about the movie of You've Got Mail that I find charming and endearing. But if I'm talking about my favorite romance, the one that really sends me swooning is Pride and Prejudice.
I hear you. I'm Lucas Stripe from Chicago, and I think have a similar relationship there of like You've Got Mail is in the same category as like Notting Hill for me, where it's like it's my favorite rom-com, but the romance itself has to go to Brief Encounters, a 1945 movie from David Lean. It's just one of the most romantic movies of all time. I absolutely love it. It's about a housewife who runs into a doctor. They have like a meet cute, and then they just kind of keep meeting up, and it sparks a friendship, which sparks this kind of unsaid connection between them that they have to just figure out what to do with for the rest of the movie. It's beautiful. It's a lovely movie. I think everybody should watch it.
I'm adding it to my watch list now.
And it is only 86 minutes long, so it's great. It's great.
A dream.
Yeah. Well, before we start talking about more romance, every week we like to talk about something we've either discovered or rediscovered. So, Sandra, I'd love to hear what you're feeling this week.
Okay, so this week I am feeling another Bravo TV show that I have just recently delved into. I have dipped my toes into the waters of the Below Deck universe on Bravo, but never really committed. Mm-hmm. My mom and my parents have watched every single episode of every single franchise of Below Deck.
Oh, wow.
For those of you who don't know, Below Deck started off as one show on Bravo that has, you know, spanned out into many shows. And it's about the yachties, the crew, and the deckhands that work for private super yachts that give out private short charters to the rich. It's about the stews, the deckhands, the chefs, the captains, and them just, you know, working on these yachts, hooking up with each other, partying, fighting, you know, everything that happens in any kind of workplace reality show. And it has spurned many, many series. It's become incredibly popular. It started with just Below Deck. Now there's Below Deck Mediterranean. There's Below Deck Down Under in Australia. Below Deck Adventure. But the one that I have recently found myself hooked into is Below Deck Sailing Yacht. Again, I've watched it here and there with my parents. My close friend Linda watches all of them. And I've watched, you know, a season or so. But it's the kind of show that, like, is fun, but I'm never like, oh, this is appointment television. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the current season of Below Deck Sailing Yacht, it's currently airing season 4. I've heard from all my like Bravo people on the internet that it's really, really good. So I jumped in and it is just one of my favorite seasons of television right now. One thing that makes this particular season exciting is that there is a love triangle, speaking of romance. The chief stew and the chief deck, the head of the deck department, apparently over multiple seasons have had this long-standing flirtation, will they, won't they, and in this current season, she starts to hook up with his best friend. So that is very juicy. And that's all it took for me to sign on. It's like, okay, great. Like a long simmering relationship and a love triangle, I'm there. And it's been a blast, and I can't wait for the next episode. Because I'm having such a good time with this current season, I went back and started season 1 yesterday and binged a good chunk of season 1. And I'm going to make my way through all of the seasons of this particular Below Deck. Have you ever given Below Deck a chance, Lucas?
I have not, but when I watch Top Chef, they always play trailers for it, and it looks, I would say, one of the more intriguing Bravo shows.
I was going to say, this is the kind of Bravo show I could see you getting hooked into.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, the Top Chef to Below Deck pipeline makes a lot of sense. because there is the food element. If you're interested in chefs, like, being cranky and making beautiful food, that is definitely a part of Below Deck. But it's also just fun to watch, to see, again, a workplace, to see how bosses manage employees in very, like, tight quarters. The type of people that work in yachting are often travelers that are kind of fun and spontaneous. So you have really interesting personality types on board. Again, they're all, you know, usually young and beautiful. So there's a lot of like fun, like relationships that happen. One thing that made me interested in Below Deck is that I know Steven Soderbergh watches it religiously. And he's someone that I kind of view as having pretty good taste. And so I thought, oh, Steven Soderbergh has a Bravo show that he loves. And I think that speaks highly of how entertaining it is.
100%. Every time I see it on his list every year of, like, everything he's watched, I'm just like, I mean, this guy watches a lot of good stuff. So the fact that he's watching makes me feel like I should also participate.
Totally. And I think also the fact that my dad liked it
maybe
speaks to that you might enjoy it as
Look,
well.
I feel like me and your dad lined up on a lot of media. So
Right. So yeah, I would recommend here's the thing about a lot of the Bravo shows that I want to pitch to you. And this is the one that I think I would, you know, the other ones I don't necessarily think you would enjoy.
Yeah.
But this one I do think you would. The beauty of a lot of Bravo is that it is good enough that you can make it appointment viewing. You sit down, you are rapt attention, like you're invested. But it is also fluffy enough that it's the kind of show that you can just have on while you're cleaning your house, while you're, you know, packing for a trip. You know, it's they're very good at like constantly reminding you what's happening in the plot, you know, so that if you zone out for a little bit, you're fine. You're not going to miss anything super important. And I think it's important to have those shows that are like easy to watch 5 episodes while you get a bunch of stuff done, while you're getting ready for a party, while you're cleaning your house, whatever it is. I don't know if you have any television that serves that purpose currently.
It's probably Bob's Burgers is my.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's my like chill downstairs TV. Like when I'm folding laundry or something like that, that's what I'll put on.
Yeah, I think you would like this, especially like, you know, because they're on these yachts, they're usually in gorgeous locales. So you get to see them. They spend a lot of time in the Mediterranean. Like a lot of these are in Greece and in France and But some of them go to Thailand. Again, a lot of, there's one that's solely set in Australia. The Below Deck Adventure, I think, is set in Norway. And so you get to see beautiful parts of the world. You get to laugh at really annoying rich people. I think it's a really fun show. Sailing Yacht is a great place to start also, because they're the ones that, again, they have the sails, so it's even a trickier of a yachting experience. They're the boat's constantly like going all, shifting angles and going all over the place. The current season that I, like, again, that has gotten me really hooked, season 4, one thing I like about it is that compared to a lot of different seasons that I've seen of the different Below Decks, this crew is incredibly competent. No one's getting fired, everyone's good at their job, and all of the drama is from the interpersonal workings, or the boat engine, like, you know, failing, or things like that. Mm-hmm. Some of the other shows, you know, you'll have someone who is completely inexperienced, and a big part of the drama is, like, will they learn how to do their job or not? A lot of people get fired for being, you know, like, having anger management issues. And that's all well and good, but it is something really special to watch people just be really good at their job.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it is all focused on the crew, not necessarily, like, the people on the yacht. What, I don't know.
Right, right. The crew is the main characters.
Yeah.
And so the voyages are, like, 2 to 3 day charter, to 4 day charters.
Yeah.
And so it's like they're – a season will have, you know, anywhere from – 5 to 10 charters in the season.
Got it.
And it's different groups. It'll sometimes it's a family, sometimes it's a girls' trip, sometimes it's, you know, it just depends. And sometimes they're very sweet, and sometimes they're the most awful, obnoxious people you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And the show doesn't hold any punches on, like, showing how badly behaved the guests can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you like it and Steven Soderbergh likes it, then yeah. I feel like I have to watch this at some point. So
I would say this current season, again, season 4 of Sailing Yacht, might be a good intro place.
Yeah.
Because, again, there's a lot of stuff happening with the boat this season that's really interesting. The boat's, like, breaking down. So, yeah, that'd be where I would recommend.
Okay.
Okay, well, what are you feeling this week?
Okay, I am feeling an action thriller from Park Chan-wook, one of his first ones, Joint Security Area, which is about two North Korean soldiers who are killed in the border area between North and South Korea, which prompts an investigation by a neutral investigator who ends up receiving different accounts from both sides and has to kind of dig into that. But it's really about the people who are involved in the shooting and their relationships with each other and kind of how all of this kind of came to be. It is a very interesting story about, like, cultural identity, national identity. The investigator is technically Korean, but was born in Switzerland and has never been to Korea. And then you have, you know, the North Koreans and the South Koreans. And so there's just a lot of, I think, interesting discussions that end up happening around, you know, around identity. Also, this movie came out in 2000. So at this point, I mean, 2000 doesn't feel like that long ago to me, but it is, like, what, 23 years ago at this point?
Yeah.
But at that time, you know, you still had people who, you know, had been alive when there was one Korea. And so, like, a lot of that, you know, comes up as well. But I think it's actually a really good movie about friendship and relationships. And I know we're talking about romance today, but there's a lot of romance in friendship.
Sure.
And so just the yearning for connection and stuff that people have, I think, is shown beautifully in this movie. It is a relic of its time for sure, but I really love Joint Security Area.
My assumption is that you're watching this as part of Blank Check's Park Chan-wook series.
Yes, I wanted to get ahead of the curve and just, I'm going to jump in now. So,
you know, Blank Check, for anyone who doesn't know, is a film podcast that does directors, that covers, we'll pick a director and cover their entire filmography. We're both big fans of the hosts of that podcast. And oftentimes I kind of will just tune in whenever there's a movie that I know I've already seen, you know what I mean? Like, or if it's a movie that it's like, I haven't seen that, but I get the gist and, you know, I want to hear them talk about this movie.
Yeah.
This series, Park Chan-wook is someone who I love. The films of his that I have seen, I adore. And so I really want to jump in and get his filmography covered along with this podcast. So
yeah, I felt the exact same way. This was one that the only other one that I've done this on where I'm like, I'm going to watch every single movie, you know, in order, was Stanley Kubrick. And so this is one that I was just like, I've got to jump in now. And he only has like, I think like 7 films. So it's not a massive undertaking. Whereas some of the directors they cover, you got like 15 films that you got to catch up on. It's just like, I can't do this. So,
well, I'm excited that you're going to finally watch Stoker.
It's happening. I know. Yeah. I have it ready to play. So,
yeah. And so this one, Joint Security Area, where did you watch it?
It is available on Tubi. Anybody can watch it free with ads.
Nice. Tubi is a nice resource for...
It is.
Yeah,
it really is. I hate ads in the middle of movies, but
totally
a lot. I mean, that's how I grew up watching movies on like TV and stuff like that. A lot of my favorite movies I have seen for the first time with ads. So
yeah,
it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. I need to jump in and join you on that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's get into past lives. This film stars Greta Lee, T.L. Yu, and John Magaro, and follows the reunion between two childhood friends as they contemplate their relationship and where they are in their own lives. It is a walk and talk movie, which we absolutely love, and it is a simmering relationship movie is what I'll say up front.
Sure.
So overall, I think this movie has been talked about a lot coming out of Sundance, and it's one we've been anticipating, I think, for most of this year. So Sandra, I would love to hear your thoughts on Past Lives.
Yeah, this is one that like I had no idea was coming until everyone was raving about it. Everyone that I follow on Letterboxd, on Twitter, is saying, like, this is the movie of the year that you need to make sure to watch. So I was excited to see it. I got to see an early preview screening, a few days before it released at my indie theater. And then I also went and saw it again for a second time with my mom this weekend. Needless to say, because I went and saw it a second time, I can safely say I adore this film. It's the best thing I've seen so far in 2023. I was completely swept away by it. I'm going to spend the rest of this podcast raving about all the details that make this film special, but I just want to get ahead of the conversation and just say that this is like a beautiful, incredible experience that I think every single person that loves movies needs to make time for this year.
I 100% agree with that. I think one of the interesting things about like this kind of plot where it's like two childhood friends are, you know, having conversations and one of them is married now and just like contemplating like what those relationships are like. A lot of the movie, and this is not a spoiler, but like a lot of the movie would be built around like, I think, secrets about like keeping things from each other. And that's how you build the tension of the movie and stuff like that. And that's not what this movie is at all. This movie is about open, honest conversations about feelings, about relationships, about where you are in your life. And I think that's what makes this movie so special, is people can have open and honest conversations. And you then get the drama of the movie comes from those feelings as opposed to this kind of like manufactured conflict. And I just think like to be able to keep that interest for the length of this movie is just really good writing and really good directing. Mm-hmm. This movie is beautiful. I'm excited to see it again. I think the first time through, I was just tense the entire time, not knowing like where this movie was going to go, in a good way. And I think the second time through, I'm going to get to just kind of like bask in the conversations and the feelings that are happening. I really enjoyed this movie a lot, and I agree that it's definitely, it's the best thing I've seen this year. But I'm excited to like get another crack at it to really see how I feel about it a second time.
Like we've mentioned earlier, this is a directorial debut. And I really am, I find myself especially fond of directorial debuts.
Me too.
I think, you know, like you hear the thing about bands, right? There's like the sophomore slump where because their first album, they've been waiting so long to make that first album. They have so many ideas that have built up over time, right? So the first album is like really special. And I think there's a lot of similarities when it comes to films where you can oftentimes in directorial debuts feel like this is a story that this director has been trying to tell for who knows how long. And they have all their talent and their ideas and their passion just like waiting to get out of them, and this is the first opportunity that we get to see that like kind of explode onto the screen.
And I will narrow in on like writer directors who have you know, this is their screenplay. They're not just like picking up a screenplay from somebody else. Like they have been thinking about this story and figuring out how to not only how to just write it, but also how to show it for so long that it just like, it really like the movies that are in my head are like obviously other Walk and Talk movies, like, you know, the Sunrise movies, but specifically like first time directors, I'm thinking of like Bo Burnham with Eighth Grade. I'm thinking of Columbus from Coconata.
Shit House
from Cooper Rave. Yeah. I just think like those movies are so special, even if they're not perfect and they're not like, eventually what we come back to is like, this is the greatest movie of all. I mean, we have listed some of those on our, as our number one movie, you know, on our top 10 list. Yeah. But it's just interesting to see kind of like how they interpret making a film for the first time.
Yeah. So from that list, I would say the first time I watched this movie, I was overwhelmed by how similarly I felt it was, not in plot, but just in style to Columbus, a movie that you and I both love. Did you feel that when you were watching it?
I did. A lot of like the stillness, I think both of those directors let there be space in the movie to think, to just take in the world that these characters are in a way that I find beautiful and also just extremely compelling.
Yeah. There were so many shots that reminded me of Columbus. The way that the camera will like sit on a room for extended periods of time, the way that it plays with reflective surfaces, is a big thing in both of those films. Obviously like Columbus is a movie about like two people exploring a city. So like the city is a big, the architecture and the landscape of that city is really important. And that's really important in this film, which is set in both Korea and in New York. And so a lot of this film is like soaking in the atmosphere of the buildings, the parks, the place, the structures that they're all walking amongst. And so that was so comforting to be reminded of a movie that has like incredibly that has moved me and has been really important to me and that I think is beautiful, to feel, and not in a way where it's like, oh, I felt like Celine's song was, you know, ripping off Columbus by any means. This film feels very individual, but just that like there are similarities that I find myself being drawn to.
Definitely.
Yeah, and to speak more on just the way that the camera works in this movie, I think when the story itself and the writing is very good, but what I was really like entranced by is like how observant the camera is. The way, how slow it moves, how it really like everything in this movie takes its time in a way that I find very confident, you know, like you have to really like trust in your story to move this quietly and slowly throughout the film. And I feel like it does so beautifully.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like the places, because there are so few people in this movie, the places that the camera chooses to sit are usually, people are in it, but they're not the center of the frame, or they're not like the in the front of the frame. So you have their relationship to the space that they're in, taking up a large part of kind of, and because they're sitting for so long, a lot of time too. And so I think it just really makes the film feel lived in, like these spaces feel real. But also makes you contemplate a lot more, I think, about how these characters are feeling, because they're in these specific locations, which is just, I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Another thing that I really want to commend this film on is, like I said, like we talked about the plot, is that it's about a character who is, you know, from Korea, who leaves her childhood friend behind, and then they reconnect as adults. So this film is taking place over, you know, decades, over many long periods of time, and the way that this film plays with time and the actors themselves have to play different time periods, I thought was really, really beautiful. I think it's really interesting to see an actor play two different versions of their character in two different periods of time, and what stylistic choices are made to like distinguish those two performances. Yeah. What, you know, choices the actor is making, what choices the costume department is making, you know, and there can be those distinctions can be very subtle, or they can be very obvious. And some movies like go over, like comedies will go over the top, you know, to really set those things apart. And this movie obviously does it so gracefully. I love looking at the little minutiae of how you, make those two performances feel cohesive and yet also like separate. Definitely. Before we get into spoilers, I think I do want to just talk about how generally I feel about the performances of the three main actors in this film. So this film stars Greta Lee as the main character Nora. She's so good. I mean, here's the thing I'll just say, is that this film has three main stars: Greta Lee, Tae Yoo, who plays her like Korean childhood friend, and then as an adult, and then John Magaro, who plays her husband in New York. And it is just like powerhouse performing on all three actors.
I was just gonna say, I have only ever seen Greta Lee in comedies before this. So her performance is incredibly strong. Like, I knew she was good, but like watching her in this, I'm just like, oh, she has like a stillness to her that really screams movie star to me.
Like, definitely.
That I'm very excited to see what she's in the future.
She brings such a, like, this character is a playwright in New York City. There's a sophistication to her, an intellectual sophistication to her, that's kind of inherent. And she like pulls that off. So like, this is the kind of person that you would see out and about and be like, wow, that's like a beautiful chic person, this character. And then you would speak to, and you'd be like, wow, I'm thoroughly impressed. I want to impress you. And you understand why, like, the two men in this movie are both obsessed with her in different ways. Tae Yoo, who plays Hae-sung, the character from Korea that is like her long lost childhood friend, is movie star material in this to me. Yeah. His face is so striking that you're like, wow, like you need to lead a million more like sweeping romances, because I was so taken by him.
He plays, I mean, he is in, I mean, speaking of Park Chan-wook, he was in Decision to Leave, but he plays a much smaller role in that movie. And so like, when I saw him, because I, watching the trailer, I was like, I know I've seen this guy before. And I was like, oh yeah, I've seen him in that. But I haven't actually like seen him act, I feel like, until I saw Past Lives. And I was just like, oh man, this guy will be leading everything soon.
Yeah, I can't wait to see more of him. And then John Magaro, here's something I find interesting about John Magaro. When I saw the trailer for this movie, I was like, oh, I love that he's in this. I love John Magaro. You know, like, I'm a fan. Then after watching this, I was like, wow, I really love John Magaro. He's so good in this. I have like a huge crush on him after this movie. But part of me, and I, like I said, I saw this with my mom, and she told me, she was like, I know him from something. What do I know him from? And I go, oh yeah, like he's definitely been around, you know, like he's been in stuff. But there's something about him that I have this familiarity with him as a performer, as if I have been watching him ever since I was young. Like, he feels like an actor that I fell in love with in, like, The Mighty Ducks or Almost Famous, like a Patrick Fugit, you know, like where you saw him young and he's just continued to do interesting things. And yet when I look at his IMDb, that really isn't the case. That, like, I've seen him in things like The Big Short, and obviously we talked about we saw First Cow.
See Carol.
I haven't seen Carol. I know, isn't that wild? He was in The Umbrella Academy, the Netflix show. So of course I've seen him in things before, but there's nothing that like stands out as like, oh yeah, that's the movie that you saw him in and fell in love with him.
For me, it is Orange is the New Black. I watched all of Orange is the New Black and he was, so like, that's the thing that I feel like I know him from, but I also feel like when I watched him there, I was like, I know him from a thing, you know, before that. So
exactly. Yeah. Or like The Social Network. Like there's all those, like those coder guys in The Social Network that you feel like went on, you know. And it's just, there's just, it feels like there's something that's missing from his IMDb that like we all saw when we were like 13, you know. Needless to say, like I said, he's just so good in this movie. And the relationship between his character and Greta Lee's character is what makes the movie so impressive to me. And we're going to talk more about that in spoiler. But I'm blown away by all three of them.
Agreed. Before we get into spoilers, I will say this is in theaters right now. It is a movie that I would recommend to everybody to see in theaters. It's beautiful. It is a movie that I feel like people will pick up their phones during if they watch it at home.
Watch it at home. Yes. Yeah. Don't do that. It's too good to, the instinct is understandable, but do try to avoid that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready to get into spoilers?
Yes, I'm ready.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
Are you paying attention?
It's your last chance to walk away.
Let me tell you what's going to happen.
Now, crack and gas.
Spoilers!
Remember, you wanted this.
So throughout this movie, the whole time I was like, I mean, I think the question that you're supposed to think is she still in love with this guy? to an extent.
Yeah.
And then also, what now? Like, we know she still has feelings for him. That's kind of shown as the movie progresses, but it's like, what do you do now? And I think what really resonated with me is at the ending, they're standing there, there's 2 minutes until his Uber shows up, and they turn and they look at each other, and the car pulls up, and he starts to get in the car, and then he turns around and says the past lives things of, you know, in another life.
Yeah. Like, what if this is a past life?
Who are we? It's not why are we. It's who are we? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just think that's just such a beautiful thing. Like, I don't have anything profound to say about it, just that it's a beautiful sentiment to share at this point in the movie. And then in addition to have her then walk back and John McGarrah is sitting on the porch smoking and starts bawling and he hugs her. And that's the end of the movie. And it's beautiful. Yeah. There is no like ill resolution to it. There is just love in that moment. There is just love, and I loved it.
Yeah. Let me just say, there's a lot of spiritual ideas, both in fiction and in the real world, that I think are really beautiful. That I don't know if I necessarily believe are true. You know, like there's lots of them. Like the idea of fate, the idea of karma. Like all of these things are like, yeah, I don't know if karma is actually real, but I understand why people cling to the idea of it, you know? And the idea of reincarnation is the one that is the most enticing to me of all of those ideas. That, like, it's, I think, a really, really beautiful thought that our lives don't end, they just cycle through, and that, you know, people find each other in multiple lifetimes. I think it's incredibly comforting. I think it's obviously incredibly romantic. And I love that this movie, uses that idea to kind of tackle the broader idea of there are people in your life that are just not meant to be. You know what I mean? That, like, that doesn't mean that make them less important or the chemistry less real or the connection less special, but it just, they're just not meant to be your romantic partner or the person you spend your life with or the person that you get to see all the time. And that past lives are the ways that we justify those missed connections, yeah. Right? It's something that I think everyone reckons with. Like, not only, like, what would my life have been like if I had gone this different path, but who else would be in my life if I had gone this different path? You know, there's been a lot of talk about how multiverses are really, like, in right now. And this is obviously not in any obnoxious way, but this is, like, part of that trend that, like, this is a version of, like, what would past lives, reincarnation is just, like, another version of multiverses, right? Like, me in a different world, what would it be like? It's so funny that that is, like, on everyone's mind right now is, you know, that dreaming of what would my life look like? I love that this movie is, like, asking all of those questions.
I like it a lot. And I really like the idea of thinking about your past as a past life. It's like, I was a different person at age 12 than I am now. And so that is a past life for me. Like, you can't know me now just because you knew me at that age. And, and 12 years later, what does that look like? I am a different person from when I was then. And so, like, there's saying, like, this is a past life. Because what we're living right now will be a past life, and I will be a different person in the future. And what does it mean that who are we now versus who will we be in the future? I think it's just it's such an interesting way of looking at it, at looking at relationships.
Yeah.
And like you said, like, it is about choices. It's not you are meant to be with this person. It's not, you know, you need to be with this person. It's you have made a choice to be with this person.
One of my favorite moments is when at the bar when they're having that, like, long conversation and he said, like, you know, this is who you were meant to be. You were meant to be a person who leaves. But then he says, but to Arthur, you are a person who stays. I love, like, that he was, that character was able to, like, describe it that way and distinguish, like, this is the choice. Like, these are the choices you made that make you who you are, that for him, you're a person that stays.
Yeah. This movie is so good.
It's really good. It's really good. I also loved that obviously they had, like, this deep connection when they reunited in New York together in the final third of the movie. But that it wasn't like this, like, amazing sexual chemistry, that it wasn't like she was instantly attracted and in love with him. You know, she kind of says, like, he's so Korean. Yeah. Like, he's, you know, like, he's not the kind of person, he's not like her husband, you know, the person that she is clearly, like, in love with and attracted to. And I like that idea that, like, you can have a connection to someone and and have these special conversations with them and also inherently know, like, they're not right for me. Not just because we don't live in the same city, but, like, we've become these different people. And, you know, even if I was single right now, I don't know that this would work between the two of us.
Yeah. And to me, I feel like that's something that people only start to realize as they get older. Like, I feel like if you're 20, you're like, I have a connection with person, we're perfect. Like, the end.
Right.
Whereas as you get older, you can recognize I have a connection with this person, and yet we are not meant to be, like, we are not compatible on it, on that level that we're talking about. So it's, I think the timing of this movie, like, the age that the characters are, is also perfect of, like, this makes sense to be having these conversations now. It couldn't happen 10 years before. It couldn't happen 10 years after. You would be in an entirely different place in your life. And so it's just, I don't know. I don't have a ton more to say about it. To me, it just feels like I could talk about intimate moments about the movie forever.
Sure. So. Well, one thing that I do want to say is that again, you could pitch this movie to someone, right, on its surface and say it's about a woman who's married in New York who reconnects with, like, her childhood sweetheart. And I think the easy, dramatic version of that is she has some kind of affair. Right. They have this, like, she's torn between the two. You know, like, who does she stay? Does she stay with the husband? Does she go with her childhood sweetheart? What makes this movie so, like, smart and special is that, like, that is not the plot of this film. And that the relationship that she has with her husband is, to me, so special and beautiful. Like, what the scenes of them together are just as beautiful of a love story as this, like, long lost connection.
And him being able to open up and, like, share his fears about, you know, them reconnecting, and his, you know, doubts about, you know, his insecurities, is an important part of why she likes him, you know, why she's with him.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's not like that is a, that adds more drama to the movie. It adds more, I think, authenticity and more connection between them, which is,
There were so many little details in those scenes of the two of them in New York together that I thought were so such smart ways of showing, like, this is a couple that is in love and, like, and that are good together. Not that this is not a couple that is, like, troubled, and he's not, like, the asshole white American husband that he, like, kind of describes that he could be in the story version. Like, the fact that, you know, when they see each, like, they've been married for, like, 7 years, I think is what they say in the movie, but they've been together for 12. So, one, they've been together this long. When they're the kind of couple that still holds hands when they walk down the sidewalk in this on the streets of New York together. That scene and them in bed, like, cuddling and talking about what they're going to eat is so intimate and sweet. There's just all those these little details peppered that show, like, these two people, this is not just a marriage of convenience. This is not something that they've settled into and they're kind of bored. You know, like, this love is, like, thriving. Yeah. And, like you mentioned, that they're so communicative with each other. That when she comes home from the visit, that she says, like, you were right. You know, like, he came here for me. That's not a secret, something that she keeps to herself. Like, they're having, like, intimate conversations about this.
I feel like I keep saying it, but, like, the drama that could be made out of this movie isn't. And so it just makes the movie, one, so much harder to make and write, but also so much more real and honest about what the actual conflict is, which is, I love it.
Yeah. And that conversation of the two, with the two of them in bed.
Yeah.
Is such beautiful writing just to watch. You know, I feel like another movie that I loved this year is You Hurt My Feelings. Have you had a chance to see that yet? That movie also, what I love about both of these is to watch two married people have a real honest conversations about their feelings and their insecurities in their marriage that is a good marriage is, I feel, very rare in cinema. You know, we don't get two people in love, like, essentially having what would be, like, a conversation you might have in therapy, right? Like, really getting into the nitty-gritty of, like, the emotional connection that you two share. Oftentimes in movies, we get these big sweeping conversations about, like, I love you, I don't, I hate you, you know, like, it's never, like, these intimate discussions that I find, like, so fascinating and beautiful.
I agree.
So another thing, one thing I wanted to kind of also touch on that I talked about in the beginning is the little stylistic details that made the 24-year-old versions versus the 36-year-old versions.
I loved it.
So smart. The clothes that they were wearing, the way that they did their hair, the way that they spoke to each other. This movie, I think, really gets right having, like, a long-distance digital relationship with someone. It was fun to see Skype play a major feature in a film for as a little like insight into our podcast for anyone listening, Lucas and I use Skype to record our podcast with each other.
We're the only people in the world who do that, I'm positive.
So. I know. We started this podcast like over 6 years ago, back before Zoom was a thing, before FaceTime was really like on computers, and so Skype was like the option. And we've just continued with it. And so it is so funny that like you and I have like stuck with Skype. And when that like little sound effect played in the movie, it made me think of you. It was so funny. Also, like this type of character, the Hae-sung character, how, you know, the Nora's character refers to him as idealistic at one point. And how he's the one that has really like kind of clung to this connection that the two of them had. He's the one that goes searching for her the first time on the internet. He's the one that flies to New York to see her. I loved that portrayal of someone who is clinging to this idea of a person he has in his mind, and how like easy that is to like in the age of the internet, like find them on the internet and obsess over them, you know?
It's a great movie. I can't wait for more people to see it.
Yeah. Like I said, this is my favorite movie of the year so far. I mean, it's early in the summer still. Like, there's plenty of the year left, but I would be incredibly surprised if this movie doesn't make my top 10.
Well, as we wrap up, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on all social media platforms at Sandra Amstutz. My last name is spelled Amstutz.
And you can find me on Letterboxd at Lucas and Stuff.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Every time. I don't know why I cannot say thanks for listening. Time I pause and you end up ending in the podcast.
That's okay.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Goodbye now. Goodbye.
Go away. I'll see you soon, okay?
That's it. Go home.
Yep.
Moving along, Padre.
Goodbye, old friend.
That's it. That's our show for tonight, people.